However much most people may love Caleb, the ones who don't really don't these days, Merlin reflected gloomily. And I'd be a lot happier if I thought the temple loyalists weren't getting themselves organized. Or if I at least knew enough about who they are and where they're doing the organizing to keep an eye on them. That attempt on Stainer was bad enough, and it came within a whisker of succeeding, largely because I didn't and don't know enough about them and the people like them to spot it coming ahead of time. Actually, he would have preferred not having to spy on any of Caleb's subjects for a lot of reasons, including the fact that it felt like a violation, especially when there was absolutely nothing anyone could have done about it, even if they'd realized it was happening. Keeping an eye on political figures like Narmon or Hector was one thing. Playing the role of Peeping Tom on private citizens was something else again. And the fact that he saw no alternative didn't make him one bit happier. In fact, it made him less happy. Necessity was a poisonously seductive argument, however genuinely unanswerable it might be upon occasion, and Merlin didn't want to get into the habit of justifying the abuse of his capabilities. That bit about power corrupting worries me, he admitted to himself. The group of four is proof enough that it really does, and, in some ways, my power is even greater than theirs. Or it could be, at any rate. It's bad enough knowing that I'm, for all intents and purposes, potentially immortal without giving myself any easy rationalizations for treating people who aren't immortal as if I'm somehow naturally superior to them. I don't want to be giving away pieces of my soul that way. Assuming Michael's right about my still having one, of course. I wonder if... His introspection was abruptly interrupted as the door opened and Caleb and Charlian came through it. Caleb was magnificent in white breeches and a traditional Carisian tunic of tawny amber cotton silk, trimmed in rich green and embroidered with the black and gold kraken of his house. The rubies and sapphires of the formal crown of state glittered on his dark hair like flashes of red and blue fire. The crimson cloak of his full court regalia, trimmed in the snowy white fur of a mountain slash lizard's winter pelt, was thrown over his shoulders, and the katana Merlin had given him rode at his side in a newly made black scabbard set with faceted gems and clasped in silver. Charlian had attended the dawn mass in one of the sumptuous, tailored gowns she'd brought from Chisholm, but for this ceremony she wore a Carisian wedding gown. The decision had been hers. Caleb had actually been in favor of her wearing a Chisholm-style gown as a symbol of the unification of their two kingdoms. But as soon as she'd made her desire known, the seamstresses of Tellisburg had erupted in a virtual death match to see who would be allowed to design and craft the queen's gown. The competition had been not simply intense, but characterized by scrupulously polite, utterly venomous exchanges. Merlin had been a little surprised when it was all settled without actual bloodshed, and he suspected there were going to be several multi-generational feuds between competing dressmakers and their progeny unto the fifth or sixth generation. Despite that, he and Caleb had been forced to admit that the queen's choice had been an inspired one. Word that she'd insisted on donning Carisian fashion for her wedding had gotten out, and it had quickly become yet another factor in the way her Carisian soon-to-be subjects had taken her to their collective heart.